Dear listeners, hello and thank you for joining us for this 248th edition of Sudbury News Talk magazine. I hope you're well and weathering the current temperature changes. My name is Michelle Mandry and I will be your presenter today. First, I have some sad news. You may have noticed that Richard Fawcett has been absent from the magazine for some months now. And I'm sorry to report that after a period of illness, Richard has passed away. His magazine contributions had a singular style and wit, and you could usually rely on him for a different take on whatever the topic might be. Richard was a jovial presence in the recording studio, and we will all really miss him. Today's magazine edition, however, is all about Suffolk. As 21st of June is Suffolk Day, our contributors were set the topic Days Out in Suffolk. And we have a small but perfectly formed selection for your listening pleasure. Let's set off with Margaret King for one of Suffolk's most iconic destinations.
A Day Out in Suffolk. A day out in Suffolk offers many opportunities. What can I list? Country walks, heathland strolls, coastal rambles, ancient towns and quaint villages, historic sites with much castle clambering, not to mention a number of overhyped and overpriced seaside tourist locations, much beloved of the tabloid press and the weekend magazines. I will add, of course, that these are worthy of the publicity, but probably best avoided in the high season. So many places to choose from, all within the lovely county of Suffolk. My choice is from a recent day's visit to a very well-known place, which, as far as I am aware, is unique within the county and the country. In late April, we joined a coach trip to Sutton Hoo near Woodbridge. The iconic site, now owned and managed by the National Trust, immediately conjures up images of the Anglo-Saxon ship burial and the vast treasure found within it. This treasure, now residing in the British Museum, probably the only place which can afford the insurance. Over the years, I have paid a number of visits. Way back, there was not much to see there, but some grassy mounds and a mock-up of how the ship was imagined, with a few treasure replicas laying within it. Today, it is a whole different ball game. Sutton Hoo was gifted to the National Trust in the 1990s and first opened to the public in 2002. It is pleasing to note that the subsequent work and development has been done sympathetically, and Sutton Hoo has, thankfully, escaped the more evident aspects of the National Trust's wokeism. To recap briefly, in the 1930s, Mrs. Edith Pretty lived in Tranmere House, a large property on the site, from where she could see both the mounds and the River Deben. Her curiosity about the earthen mounds on her land led her to hire an amateur archaeologist called Basil Brown to investigate. It soon became clear that, as in the Valley of the Kings, ancient grave robbers had already paid visits to many of the mounds. The first excavations were fruitless. However, to much excitement, in 1939, the remains of an Anglo-Saxon ship burial was discovered. Very quickly, the powers that be realised that this was something truly momentous, a completely untampered treasure hoard. Unerringly, the national scholars and professional archaeologists showed up and took over sidelining poor Brassel Brown almost entirely. Bit by bit, the fabulous treasure was removed. The now famous black and white photograph showing the ghostly imprint of the ship was taken, and as World War II loomed dangerously on the horizon, the whole site was filled in. I think that it works best to visit on a fine sunny day, which proved to be the case for us. One can start by admiring a true-to-life size, quite stylized build of the ship, which dominates the forecourt, before you head into the restaurant for a welcome coffee, sandwich and scone. Next, take a leisurely walk down to the mounds, which comprise a former Anglo-Saxon cemetery. Here, there now is a tall 81-step viewing tower, from where one can survey the entire area and gather much information at each landing stage. The bow and stern of the 27-metre-long ship protrude from mound number one, giving an idea of its vast size. After a careful descent, go on to Tranmer House, which is now open to the public and filled with all the pictures, maps, videos, memories and information of the great discovery. Happily, amateur archaeologist Basil Brown is fondly remembered and now given the huge credit he deserves. Next, follow the well-marked path up through the trees to a seated viewing point above the River Deben, overlooking Woodbridge on the opposite bank. It is a remarkably long trek from here to the burial site, and yet those Saxon workers must have hauled the ship up from the river to its final resting place. A long, arduous experience, I imagine. Finally, it's on to the visitor centre and the central area, which now has on show magnificent replicas of the main treasure pieces, many of their component parts coming from all over the world. A very knowledgeable National Trust volunteer assisted us as we admired the high quality of the helmet, the shield, the sword, shoulder clasp, buckle, purse, spoons and weaponry, explaining many fascinating details. But just who was on it in such a spectacular fashion? Historians now believe that the most likely person to have been buried in the ship was Raedwald, the king of the East Angles, who died around 624 AD. The mystery of the missing body, or bones, was finally solved in the 1960s when analysis of the soil showed that a body had lain in the ship but was decomposed in the very acidic environment. Having learnt so much, our explorations drew to a close. All that remained was to once again visit the ever-popular restaurant for tea and cakes, not forgetting, of course, buying a few mementos in the gift shop and the odd purchase in the excellent bookshop. Having completed the day's excursions, it was time to board the coach once again and head for home.
Thank you, Margaret. Sutton Hoo is such an extraordinary place. And I think you'd make a really good guide. So perhaps that could be your next vocation. John King now takes us somewhere rich in history and mystery.
A day out in Suffolk. From where I live, a day out in Suffolk could easily become a day out in Essex. After all, in my village, you only have to walk to the bottom of the hill, cross the main road and the little bridge, and you're there. We are indeed very close neighbours. Also, apart from the Felixstowe area, the Essex coast resorts of Clacton, Frinton and Walton, along with Mersey, Brightlingsands and others, are nearer and easier to get to than the beautiful and fascinating Suffolk beach areas. Of course, the countryside around Sudbury is in itself worthy of a day out and in its own right. The water meadows are lovely, coupled with a walk along the old rail track or a river boat ride up to Henny, and perhaps a meal and a pint at the Swan. For endless walking, there is Ickworth Park. Nothing to pay if you are a National Trust member. And at the end, you can get a coffee or whatever is your fancy in the cafe. Although familiarity breeds contempt, Bury St Edmunds on a fine day takes some beating, if only they would keep the town's footpaths in reasonable order. But in common with many places, they are dangerous and disgraceful. You are a premier town, Bury, and a Suffolk jewel, so come on. For this article, I've chosen Orford and the Ness. Orford is a lovely little town with smokehouse and cafes. There are also country pubs, one being a hotel where you can stay should you wish to make more of a day out. Orford sits on the River Old, and from the quay, boat trips can be made. We had a trip on a converted fishing boat named the Lady Florence, and a meal was included in the package. I think boat trips are best booked in advance. Orford Castle is another attraction, which according to the reviews is well worth a visit. It is on an endless mind of my next trip to Orford. A major attraction at Orford is the Ness. It is a mysterious place, for good reason. It is a renowned nature reserve and Europe's largest shingle spit. It was used by the Ministry of Defence for 80 years, from 1913 to 1993. It was used to test bomb aiming and all sorts of weaponry and research, including development of radar, which became the Chain Home system In 1953, it came under the control of the Nuclear Weapons Research Establishment. And at this point, security became very strict. And what exactly went on there was not made public at all. The air mystery deepened. This became even more weird with the appearance of the pagodas. All of this activity and the variety of buildings was concerned with the development of nuclear weapons, for this was the terrifying period of the Cold War. We know that the main activity of the Ness at that time was to test the resilience of the atomic bombs, subjecting them to G-forces, vibrations and extreme temperature variations. The pagodas were designed to collapse in the event of an accident. If you think about it, it is vital that the bomb works, and that also vital it cannot be triggered accidentally. That is why the work there was so important. I understand that two atomic bomb types were tested there. The nuclear work went on until 1973, when a new Anglo-American project was undertaken, which was the development of over-the-horizon radar named Cobra Mist. Many aerial arrays were constructed in an attempt to detect rocket launches vital minutes earlier. The Ness was purchased by the National Trust in 1993 and now open to the public as an interesting and peaceful place to visit. However, be prepared for the air of mystery which still lurks there. So a day or more in Orford is, I believe, a jolly good choice if the weather is kind. Of course, being there in that location, Aldborough, South Wall, is a place also we go to, and the place you've heard about just now, Sutton Hoo, is just down the road. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you, John. Orford does seem to have it all, and if you happen to catch its flower show in August, you're in for a real treat. And now I'm delighted to introduce our guests, in the plural, who can't be with us in the studio, unfortunately. But from the Sudbury Tourist Information Centre, we have Tilly Snell, who has written the article for us, and Wen Pickus, who is reading. And they're going to tell us all about the delights of Sudbury and why we should visit.
Why Sudbury believes it could be the first UK town of culture. Earlier in the year, the Department for Culture, Media and Sport announced it was opening bids for the UK's very first Town of Culture 2028. Towns from across the UK enter the competition to showcase original storytelling and empowering, accessible culture. As you can imagine, it is highly competitive, with over 400 towns throwing their hat in the ring. So why is Sudbury entered when there is such a strong field? The competition aims to spotlight the cultural contribution of towns to our national story. There are three categories, small, medium and large size, and from these, an overall UK Town of Culture winner will be selected. The winning town will be awarded £3 million to deliver a cultural programme in 2028, lasting for around 6 months. Additionally, the two finalists from their category will receive £250,000 each to deliver elements of their bid. So here lies the challenge. Beyond the obvious, Sudbury's incredible cultural heritage extends way beyond being the birthplace of Thomas Gainsborough, the UK capital of silk, or the inspiration for Dodie Smith's 101 Dalmatians. Culture is so much more. It's about Sudbury's unique heartbeat, our 1,000-year-old charter market, our independent business community, our beautiful green spaces, all central to Sudbury's life today. Venues at the heart of our community like Sudbury Arts Centre, Key Theatre, Miltai Gallery, Sudbury Library and of course Gainsborough's House all keep Sudbury's arts and community offerings at the forefront. But what about our beautifully biodiverse water meadows? 242 listed buildings, award-winning silk mills, brickmakers or breweries, our food and drink offering, one of the last dedicated tourist information centres in the region, our events programme, our community spirit. All of this makes Sudbury what it is today, and it's our pride in our town that sets us apart. So, with the support of our local cultural venues, Sudbury Town Council is ready. We want as many visitors and residents to enjoy what Sudbury has to offer. Through the use of social media, the Sudbury Town Council website, and the monthly publication of What's On, accessible both online and in the Tourist Information Centre, we are working hard to ensure the word reaches as many people as possible. The Sudbury Tourist Information Centre is a dedicated base for disseminating information. From here, you can collect the Talbot Trail map or, alternatively, download it from the Sudbury Town Council website. The Talbot Trail is a series of 14 statues on red plinths or bollards dotted around Sudbury Town Centre. They depict various fascinating episodes in the town's history over the centuries. Discover why there are dancing bears, the running boys, and William Kemp dancing a jig. Alternatively, we offer guided walks on the third Saturday of the month. This costs £7.50 and must be paid in cash, and starts from outside the Tourist Information Centre. The Heritage Centre, located next to the Tourist Information Centre, is bursting with information. The Tourist Information staff will gladly support any access requests. The museum is on the ground floor. A stone's throw from the Heritage Centre is Market Hill, where the vibrant traditional outdoor market is still a central part of Sudbury life today. Held every Thursday and Saturday on Market Hill in the centre of town, no visit to Sudbury is complete without soaking up the true character of the town with a mooch around Sudbury Market and sampling some of the delicious food on offer. Also located on Market Hill is Sudbury Arts Centre, a popular venue that runs regular clubs as well as plays and concerts. Free music recitals are currently held on Fridays from 12:30 p.m. to 1:15 p.m. up until the end of August. Again, a member of staff will happily support any access needs. Another venue offering free music recitals as well as ticketed evening performances is The Hive, located on School Street, not far from the Gainsborough House. This former United Reformed Church holds concerts on Tuesdays, 12:30 until 1:15 p.m. And a real gem, the Key Theatre. Converted in 1977 from a derelict warehouse by the River Stour, it now hosts a wide variety of music, comedy, drama, films and talks. When making the booking, request access assistance if needed. The links can be found on Sudbury Town Council website. And finally, what about visiting Gainsborough House and Milltie Gallery? Both venues run workshops where you can explore printmaking, weaving and painting, for example. Gainsborough House Gallery also welcomes assistance dogs and uses an app called Bloomsburg Connect that allows you to engage with the paintings. You'll be given the code on arrival. Not only does Sudbury offer a cultural experience, but with two breweries in close proximity, you can enjoy a tour of Maldon's, Suffolk's oldest brewery. Their award-winning core range features Suffolk Pride, Silver Adder, Black Adder, White Adder, Maltrap and Ploughman's. And their pub, the Brewery Tap, is located in East Street, Sudbury. Nethergate Brewery and Distillery, a 3-minute drive from Sudbury Town Centre, also offers tours and tasting sessions. This is located in Long Melford. Sudbury is also great for your well-being, with plenty of walks, art classes, coffee mornings and outdoor exercise. Visit the Mill Hotel and the Croft to sit in this tranquil setting and feed the ducks. They'll eat right out of your hands. Turn up for a meet-up Monday at the library from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Take part in the free boot camp at 2 p.m. or Pilates session at 3 p.m. in Bellevue Park on a Tuesday. Or simply book a weekend boat trip down the River Stour, book through the River Stour Trust. There is so much more on offer. Sudbury, steeped in history, but by no means stagnant, the town regularly hosts events that bring the community together, creating connection, nostalgia, pleasure, and celebration. Join us for Party in the Park on Sunday the 19th of July from 11 a.m, our Heritage Open Day on Saturday the 19th of September from 9 a.m, and Sudbury Christmas Fair on Friday the 27th of November from 5 p.m. All of these details can be found on the Sudbury Town Council website. And finally, does Sudbury think it can win the UK's Town of Culture? The Town of Culture competition presents an opportunity to shine a light on everything that makes Sudbury special. Not just its history, but its creativity, community spirit and ambition for the future. For Sudbury, culture is not confined to galleries and museums. It lives in the market square, along the river, within its businesses, venues and neighbourhoods, and in the people who call the town home. That is why Sudbury believes it has every chance of becoming the UK's first town of culture.
Thank you, Tilly and Wen, for a fantastic summary of all Sudbury has to offer. With a resume like that, Sudbury must be a shoo-in, surely. Well, we'll see. And now I have the quiz for you. It's a quiz of two parts this month. Let's see how you do. Question one. In science, mycology is the study of what? Question two. What is the largest bird in the world? Question three. Where did the game backgammon originate? Question four. Which country is known as the land of the midnight sun? Question five. In which Suffolk town is Adnams Ale brewed? Question six. Which artist created the scallop sculpture that sits on a beach between Aldborough and Thorpe Ness? Question seven. Newmarket is famed for being the location of the headquarters of which sport? And question 8, which saint was also king of all England? So we'll come back to those later and see how you've done. Well, now, for the first time in a very long time, our next item was written by me, and I shall, of course, read. My first experiences of Suffolk were on rare days out in Southwold with my nan and granddad to see Uncle Wally and Aunt Lil. Uncle Wally was one of granddad's brothers and kept a shop in Southwold, selling sweets and seaside accoutrements, such as buckets, spades, and those brightly coloured windmills on sticks. I suppose now I'm a grown-up, I'd call it a newsagent. The first sign we were getting near was my nan, the driver in the family, stopping for petrol at the same garage every time. It must have been on the way into town and saved a scramble for petrol for a petrol station when we inevitably left later than planned. To be honest, I remember little of the people we saw there, just the event and journey, and the lighthouse and petrol station, which clearly made a great impression on me. Southwold has been an intermittent presence for me, as Wally and Lil's children and grandchildren still have homes there. In my mid-20s, a boyfriend and I were inspired to visit Sudbury. Our inspiration was the large road signs in Chelmsford, and another time we took him Bury St Edmunds Market too. I love a market town, especially on market day with just that little bit of extra bustle. I remember enjoying both towns, but preferring Bury St Edmunds at the time. Sorry, Sudbury. Of course, I stand corrected now and rarely call Bury by its proper name either these days. By the time my early 30s came around, my sister had discovered Orford, and she, my mum and I used to stay in a lovely cottage with three stories, thoroughly unmodernised and perfect. It was a great base for exploring Aldborough and Woodbridge, while Saxmundham, not only a great name, but was very handy for shopping. At the time, the visitors' pub in the village, the King's Head, still had a meat raffle on Sunday lunchtime, which we never managed to win. We enjoyed walking in and around Orford, the lanes and alleys, passing by the smokehouse and allotments, looking inland from the sea wall, which feels a little higher than the village, as I recall. It had a huddled medieval atmosphere, helped by the 12th century castle keep and barely later church, no doubt. There have been other Suffolk jaunts. The time we went to Felixstowe when my dad missed a turn on the way to Clacton. Newmarket races and a weekend on the course campsite. Camper van parked by the rails ready for an early morning peek at the racehorses on their pre-meeting gallop. My sister and I shared a house for a number of years, and if I needed a break, it was invariably Suffolk I came to, often staying on that campsite in Newmarket or another at Leyston and exploring local sites, Anglesey Abbey, Ickworth, Dunwich, Minsbier spring to mind. There was one place I hadn't reached. People are quick to write off or dismiss certain towns. I came across that particular discrimination a number of times when expressing a desire to visit Lowestoft. But I am an explorer of sorts and favour an open mind. I know very little about Lowestoft, except that it was a big fish at one time, that it was big in fish at one time, with Viking origins going by its name. And so, 2 weeks ago, a friend and I went to Lowestoft. My first impression was that whatever the state of the British fishing fleet, another time, Lowestoft is a port town. The air smelt of salt and, I want to say fish, but it may well have been seaweed. And large metal structures dominate the views. The reason we went to Fet, the reason we went was the First Light Festival. It takes place on the beach at Lowestoft each June to celebrate or commiserate the turning of the year. It's a free festival, and this year fell just right for the summer solstice. Lowestoft is the easternmost town in the United Kingdom. So by the time my friend and I got up at 3:30 in the morning on Sunday, the sky was unreasonably light. Crucially, the sun was not due to rise until 4:33 a.m. So we had a cup of tea, pulled ourselves together, and set off for the beach. It was an eerie experience, walking with dozens of other people, all headed in the same direction, mostly silent, with bursts of rock music emanating from tents pitched randomly along the beach. Occasional sea gazers broke the uniformity of movement. I genuinely felt like I could be in a horror film at one point. Eventually, we came to the appointed place and stood expectantly, waiting for the sun to rise. Of course it was cloudy. How would it not be? But around 8 or 10 minutes in, a red-eyed sun peeped through a crack in the cloud cover to peer at us, and everyone clapped and cheered. It was enough for us. So that's me done. Now, Ken Watkins has had his fair share of days out in Suffolk. So he's here now to take us away from Suffolk just briefly.
It's been a few years since I had a day out in Suffolk, having moved to Wales in 2020 to my wife's hometown of Barry in between COVID lockdown spells. We did, however, manage to visit Sudbury for a week at the beginning of December last year, the first time we'd been back for just over 5 years. But every day of that week was taken up getting together with friends, so the furthest we got from Sudbury for a day out was to Long Melford and Acton and Brettenham, enjoying meals out with those friends. The visit also included a match day at Sudbury Rugby Club, complete with a pre-match meal and a lot of catching up with people at the club, which I covered for the Suffolk Free Press for some 20 years. Of course, during the 35 years we lived in Suffolk, we enjoyed plenty of days out, occasional trips to London with my daughter, although the shine went off that when work meant commuting to the capital, which I managed to endure for 6.5 years before throwing in the towel. And I didn't set foot on a train again until a few years later. Days at the coast were invariably enjoyable, with Southwold, Dunwich and Aldborough always worth a visit. Much nicer than some seaside towns south of the Suffolk border. Now, of course, living in Barry, which boasts 6 beaches, 3 sandy, 2 pebbly and 1 rocky, we don't need a whole day to enjoy the delights of the coast. A few minutes in the car, or a healthy 15-minute walk, gets you to one of them. And at Barry Island, there's always the possibility of fish and chips on the beach, still something to be savoured occasionally. You just need to watch out for seagulls. Cardiff, by train, as parking's a nightmare, is always worth devoting a day to, as there's plenty to explore in the capital. Or further west, along the coast to Southern Down, where parking can also be challenging, but it's a lovely area, and the effort of making an early start is rewarded with a spot in the car park. And there's always St. Fagans, just outside Cardiff, the living history museum where houses from all over Wales, spanning the centuries, have been painstakingly reassembled. To take it all in needs more than just a day, and whenever you go, there's always something new to discover. Plenty of other places in South Wales, including the delightful Tenby, just a couple of hours away by train, are within easy reach of Barry. And to avoid the delights of the M4 on the other side of the border, Bath and Bristol are just an hour or so away by train from Cardiff. We did have a slightly longer day trip last year, going to visit a lifelong friend in Chester. He has health problems, so we met up with him and his daughter and gently strolled around the town, pausing only for well-deserved coffee and cake. It was 4 hours each way by train, and the 4 hours in between made for a long but enjoyable day. Next time it won't be for a day trip, as there is still so much to explore in the city. We were planning a day out in Barry recently, not for us, but for our visitors, two friends from our university days many years ago. They were both originally from Caerphilly, just north of Cardiff, but one now lives in Birmingham, so he took an early train to Cardiff, where he was picked up. Mansell, who made that trip, was my best man, just as I had been his. Jan, who still lives in Caerphilly, was one of my wife Judy's bridesmaids, so we've known both of them for more than 60 years, and try to get together at least once a year if possible. In previous years, when Mansell has been staying at his sister's in Caerphilly, we've met up in various places and spent a pleasant few hours in the sunshine, catching up. This year, heavy rain meant we couldn't leave the house, but we had a thoroughly enjoyable day together, although I did miss those fish and chips down Barry Island.
Thank you, Ken. When you're with old friends, it doesn't matter where you go. It's the company that matters. So, time for the answers to our quiz. Question one. In science, mycology is the study of fungi. Question two. The ostrich is the largest bird in the world. Question three. The game backgammon originated in Persia, which today we call Iran. Question four. The country known as the Land of the Midnight Sun is Norway. Question five. Adnams Ale is, of course, brewed in Southwold. Question six. The Sudbury-born artist Maggie Hambling was, of course, the artist who created the scallop sculpture that sits on a beach between Aldborough and Thorpe Ness. Question seven. The sport, like with the headquarters located in Newmarket, is, of course, horse racing. And it was King Edmund, who was King of all England, and also Saint Edmund, as in Bury Saint Edmunds. So I'm assuming you got 8 out of 8 there, and we will quickly move on to Jenny Finch, who has sent a lovely account of a day out with some very special people, which I will read for her. It was when staying with my niece and her husband and family last December that one evening, after dinner, she began reminiscing on the many times as children she and her two brothers had stayed with us in Great Mapplestead during their summer holidays. Apparently, although they were always quite satisfied just wambling around the village or lounging about watching videos and eating everything or anything that didn't move, it seems we felt on occasion we should be doing our bit and take the little dears out somewhere for the day. Perhaps for no other reason than to give us all a break. At this point, it's worth mentioning that ages were 10, 8 and 6. We must have been mad. We'd already exhausted places like Frinton and Walton, so perhaps it was time we branch out a bit and take them, admittedly this time, to a favourite place of ours. On the way there were a few plaintive cries of, "How far is this place you're taking us?" and "Has it got a funfair with rides?" No, it hasn't, but it's a lovely place and you will like it. After an hour and 50 minutes drive, when desperation was beginning to set in and cries from the passengers in the back seat had been, "Are we nearly there yet?" This, by the way, just outside Sudbury. And So how far is this lovely place, did you say? That finally, we arrived in Southwold. I'm sure for those of you who are also devotees of this delightful little town, it's not really necessary to list all its attractions. Just to say, it was surprising to learn that Southwold has been described as being situated on a sort of island, surrounded as it is on the north and west by the Bus Creek, the River Blythe on the south, and with low cliffs holding back the North Sea just to the east. So safeguarded from the outside world, it really does retain a certain bygone charm. And despite its compact size, it's crammed in a lot of features worthy of a much bigger place. The lighthouse, for instance, standing up there in its dazzling whiteness, is right in the middle of town and not surrounded by sea, but pretty little houses. And those nine little greens dotted around the town, each with its own name, Barnaby, Bartholomew, Church, East, North, Tibbies, St. Edmunds, St. James, and South, all greens, although most of them not much bigger than an average back garden, but most with a welcome bench for a weary wanderer. Another very notable feature of this charming little town is the famous Sole Bay Brewery, known to have existed since 1641, probably then situated just behind the equally famous Swan Hotel. It was bought up by Adnams in 1872 and went on to win awards for its beer and a reputation for excellence which spread far and wide. My grandfather, who was a born and bred Londoner, spoke with almost hushed reverence about this esteemed Suffolk beer. There's so much more to Southwold, but as this edition is entitled A Day Out in Suffolk, I'd better move on. Old and historic, undoubtedly, though Southwold is, mustn't forget about those three kids, and this brings me to the pier. The original Southwold Pier was built in 1900 as a landing stage for the Bell steamships that sailed from London Bridge, bringing tourists and probably goods into the town. Quite an adventure if you think about it. The early construction suffered a few disasters over time, including being hit by a drifting sea mine in 1941, not to mention extensive damage caused by several pretty devastating storms. So in the end, it became reduced in length to just 60 feet. But after many years in this sorry state, it was rebuilt. Completed in 2001 to its current length of 623 feet and named as Pier of the Rear in 2002. So this is where we headed, with by now very cheerful and excited young niece and nephews leading the way. Today, as in the past, the pier is a brilliant place for everyone, with lots of nice places to eat, charming gift shops, a funny and rather saucy water clock, a traditional arcade at the front, beloved of all boys and for everyone. Pleasure we get from feeling the breeze on our faces, taking in lungfuls of sea air and hearing the tantalising swish and hiss of the sea beneath our feet as we slowly wander to the end, where dedicated fishermen spend hours waiting patiently for some unsuspecting fish to take the bait. So, as always, a good day out in lovely Suffolk. The drive home on that particular evening was blissfully peaceful. Thank you, Jenny. Southwold is a lovely place, lots to offer, and I can totally understand that peace and quiet at the end was probably the icing on the cake. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this short but sweet magazine as much as I have. Many thanks to all of our volunteers for their contributions, to our technician Dave Sullivan, and to you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.